to pull up a chair and talk some Dynasty football. I am your host, JJ Wenner, and this is the Rider Dynasty podcast. Tonight, we continue our divisional breakdowns where we go through each division, every team, providing you with the information you need to know for your drafts. Next up is the NFC West. Joining us tonight is the Sasquatch himself, Big Daddy Don Detweiler. Don, are you ready to go back to school?
Of course. You know me, man. Hope springs eternal. So here we go, back for a whole new batch of kids and a whole new batch of problems. So we'll see what happens.
Back in the saddle, brother. Also with us, you can find him at KitV_DynastyFF on Twitter. Kit Vitalich, how are things at the new job, brother?
Actually start after Labor Day. So excited, kind of doing the wind down thing at my old job. So not much to do in the next week, but I'll try to do help him out as I can.
Nothing wrong with that. Now, we have a special guest with us tonight. You can find him on Twitter at Detroit Beastie and providing fire DFS content all year at Team Rise or Fall, our friend Chris Robin. How are you doing, my brother?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure to meet you and spend some time with you in person this weekend. We've chatted a ton. I've been a guest on the boys' broadcast, but it was nice to kind of be in the same place at the same time. And can't thank you enough for reaching out yet again and having me on. I always got time for you boys.
Oh, brother, if you aren't following Chris, do it now. Even if you don't play DFS, this man is a true force of positivity in the industry. What are you working on now? Anything on the docket?
Yeah, I have my yearly Fantasy Heaven and Fantasy Hell. It's as easy and cookie cutter as it sounds. Certain players, seasonal content, you know, certain players that are just hell to own, like Amari Cooper, and certain players that are heaven to own, like Patrick Mahomes, like Lamar Jackson. Hopefully, I bumped Lamar Jackson off in favor of Justin Herbert this season, but the articles are as it sounds, and nice little series run, you know, 5 or 10 minutes per position, quarterbacks to own, running backs to own. And again, it's only August 18th, you know, middle of August. So it's all cookie cutter content right now. Get the followers in after a long layoff of football. Then that's when you hit them with the DFS stuff and that hard hitting, you know, content, you know?
Yeah, I do know. And that's what I'm looking forward to. All of your content, brother. Now, before we get into tonight's show, do me a favor. Give us a follow on Twitter at Rider Dynasty and check out our website, riderdynasty.com, for our latest articles. And now the news. Don?
So, Chris, this first one's for you. Terrace Marshall has been getting consistently positive camp reports and recently followed that up with some impressive play in the Panthers' first preseason game. Additionally, Robbie Anderson's been kind of hurt and has a hamstring that is the type of injury that tends to linger. Does this crack the door for Marshall to be an early season contributor and emerge as a top three target in this offense?
Yeah, without a doubt, absolutely yes. And I'm sure everybody has seen it, but that what you're talking about is alluding to the photo of Terrace Marshall catching it one-handed. Looks like he had a cell phone in his, like, where his calf was, or the front of his shin. I don't know. But DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson were watching him on the sideline, and kiddingly, I said, oh, Robbie Anderson looks like the guy who's going to ask me for money at the gas station. He looked disheveled. He looked bummed out. He was very much, you know, shocked and surprised, looking at the kid who will more than likely take his job. But we all know Terrace Marshall is a stud, supposedly a stud, and I think the changeover will happen sooner rather than later. So again, I'm all in on Terrace Marshall, and a long-winded way, Don, to answer your question, yes, Terrace Marshall will be a force in that offense.
JJ, next one's for you, buddy. The Bears offensive line is absolutely crumbling before our eyes, with two starters already out and news of the second round draft pick Tevin Jenkins needing back surgery, which is never good for a big man. They went out and they signed themselves from Jason Peters, formerly of the Philadelphia Eagles, to play left tackle. No inline stuff. He's out on his island. How scared does this make you for all things Bears?
It doesn't make me scared at all. I'll be honest with you. They have never had a great offensive line. They have never protected the quarterback. And David Montgomery still puts up points, right? He always gets like the fewest yards before contact, but he still manages to put up yards. Is it going to lower his ceiling? Possibly. But I just think this is going to push Justin Fields to get on the field sooner, because they're going to need somebody with legs to get away from that pass rush.
There we go. Kit, your turn. The Baltimore passing game was supposed to be the scary thing this year and take a huge step forward. But with Jackson missing time for COVID again and new receivers, Sammy Watkins and Rashad Bateman out until September sometime. And now Hollywood Brown being out with the hamstring that, again, could linger. How worried are you about the opportunity for this offense to actually throw the ball ever?
Yeah, I'm definitely worried, right? I mean, they brought in three guys and we're hoping for a third-year improvement for Hollywood, and the top two guys they brought in are going to miss at least, looks like, the beginning of the season. And we mentioned earlier, hamstrings tend to linger, especially for speed-based players like Hollywood is. So I'm worried. I mean, they have such a good rushing attack. It's such a varied rushing attack that I don't think it stops their offense overall from being effective. And Lamar, I think, is an underrated passer. So I think, you know, when the defense is so committed coming off play action, he'll still be able to find Mark Andrews in the seam. You know, I think guys like Tylan Wallace and Devin Duvernay, they play very different roles. Duvernay can maybe pick up some short slot type routes, and Tylan Wallace, at least historically, was kind of a big body down the sideline who could beat you. So they'll be given every opportunity early on to show whether they sort of have it or not. I know Duvernay had one season, but I liked him coming out of Texas last year. So maybe it cracks an opportunity for them, but definitely something to keep an eye on, and you know, the Lamar Jackson managers.
And James Proche has also been shining this preseason. So they do have some sleeper wide receivers there who could step up in the absence of Sammy and Moore. Sean Bateman. Sorry, guys. Whew. Checking myself on that one. All right, gentlemen, thank you for the news. Training camps are in session. And the news is flowing. Let's dive right in and get ready for the fantasy season. Quarterbacks in the NFC West. This is a pretty formidable pair. Chris, who are you looking at as your number one QB in the West?
Well, it's going to be no secret here. Detroit guy, Stafford from Detroit, goes to L.A. All my eyes are on him, and it's not what you think it is. Obviously, actually, it's exactly what you think it is. He was from Detroit. I wish him nothing but the best. He's a good man. He's a gamer. He's got that thing you can't teach where under, you know, come rain, sleet, or snow, this guy is going to be on the field. I remember 10 years ago, we were saying this kid he's a full-grown man, wife and like 17 daughters. This guy is about his business. He knows how to handle himself on the football field. And all the years he wasted away here in Detroit, they had really nothing brewing. And he goes now to L.A., as you, in your words, J.J., in a very formidable kind of quarterback-laden NFC West here. I'm looking for Stafford, and all homerisms aside, how can I even be a homer? He's gone now. He's in L.A. I think Stafford has I think the odds are in his favor to put up 5,000 yards. I think the odds are in his favor, you know, of throwing 33 plus touchdown passes, looking at the offense around him. You know, it hurts to lose Cam Akers. I know we'll probably get into that, but in terms of quarterbacks, it's Matthew Stafford. He has arguably, you know, aside from, let's say, like Calvin Johnson, I mean, that's something you can never really mention, but right, Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, two PPR machines, two PPR monsters here. So I'm looking for Stafford to just, if he can, up his game another notch here in LA. He was the chip that they thought that they need, and I'm sure it's going to hold true, the person and the quarterback they need to put this team over the hump here. Very tough division. I know we'll talk about it. Don't want to bury the lead here, but all eyes are on Matthew Stafford here. And one guy, if I may really quick, also have eyes on is Russell Wilson. Is he going to cook for a full season? Is it going to be 6 or 8? When's the drop-off going to come? Will it come? I don't know. So to me, it's Stafford is 1A. Russ Wilson is 1B, guys.
Yeah, I love Matt Stafford. Considering what Jared Goff did in this offense, and then now you're changing to Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford was the QB 15 with absolute garbage in Detroit last year on offense. So I am really looking forward to him breaking out. Now, Russ Wilson, how are we feeling about Russ Dunn?
Boy, you know, we always say this. It feels like every year. This is the year. This is the year they let him cook. They let him go. They let him just unleash it. And he's got weapons to do it if they choose to. And right about November-ish, the reins get put back on. Things happen, injuries, whatever. And all of a sudden, Russ isn't cooking anymore. He's got the microwave out and he's hitting up the ramen noodles. So it's a shame that coincides with the end of our fantasy season. And it's always the stumble into the end when you need him the most. hopefully this is the year they let him go, but I just, there's been such a track record and so much consistency with the coaching staff that I don't know that this is the time that that trend breaks. I'd love to see it. I just don't know.
Now, Kit, with the empowerment of QBs over the past few years, they're getting more of a say in things. They're pushing their exits. Do you think that the staff, Pete Carroll's finally understanding that, because with the noise earlier in the offseason that Russ wanted to leave, that if they don't let Russ throw the ball, that he might leave in the offseason?
No. I think they fired their offensive coordinator. I think they brought in Daryl Bevel, if I'm correct.
They did. Brian Schottenheimer left.
Yeah, and the stated reason, at least I don't know if it was stated or a little behind the issue, but I think soon after, you know, one of Carroll's thing is like, well, we're going to really go back to establishing the run. We want to go back to fundamentals and sort of brought that up. Now, maybe that was before or during, you know, the rumors about Russ wanting out of there were going on, and so maybe they are sort of kind of seeing the writing on the wall where, hey, we're going to lose this sort of, you know, franchise talent if we don't actually cater the offense to him. But again, the track record's been so consistent, I don't have faith that that's going to happen.
Now, are we looking over Kyler Murray? I mean, he did finish as the QB2. He's going as the QB3 in ADP, according to Sleeper.
Well, in my case here, right, tell me if this makes sense, because sometimes I think off the wall, sometimes people tell me I'm a dummy, but my therapist tells me I'm an abstract thinker, which makes me feel which makes me feel a lot better here. So when it comes to Kyler Murray, what you see is what you get. Height requirements aside, this kid is a stone-cold stud. Might even, I don't even think it's crazy to say this, might challenge for QB1 overall at the end of the season. His rushing upside is through the roof. AJ Green being there, I know that that's not, you know, sexy news to anybody, but just the fact he's on the sideline kind of mentoring Rondale Moore, it's huge. Excuse me. Some of these kids, they get in there and they're thrown to the wolves. But if he can have a situation like with DeAndre there, he's not expected to carry the load. So to me, not to be rude to any Arizona fans or Kyler Murray fans, it's just, it's not wise to really talk about Kyler Murray, because we can spend more time talking about what's going on in San Francisco, what's going to go on with Matthew Stafford. So I kind of throw the easy peasy layup, low-hanging fruit stuff aside and kind of focus on, you know, what's more important, what's more interesting. We all can agree Kyler Murray is it. He's the stud QB, so why even spend a ton of time?
I agree. There's some worry in because of Cliff Kingsbury. He has not coached that team to a winning record, if I'm not mistaken. The best they've been is 500. I'm a little bit worried that if they don't have a winning record, Cliff might be out of there. And I think that would affect Kyler Murray a little bit. But still, his rushing upside makes him a top five QB as long as he's healthy. Now, you brought up the 49ers, Chris. What's going to happen there? Is Trey Lance going to start the season done?
So news is that Jimmy Garoppolo has not looked great in camp and that he's hanging around and that Lance has looked great in camp. But then he goes out and goes 5-for-14 or 5-for-15 with one long TD in his preseason debut. Says to me that he needs a little bit more time. However, it's a simplistic offense that is basically very easy for a young quarterback to integrate and be super efficient with. I think with more time and more camp reps and more just more everything and being in the building, that Lance will take over sooner rather than later. So I'm looking to him by week 5.
Chris, are you with him?
Oh, absolutely. That was going to be my opening statement. I have Jimmy G around 150, 160 passing attempts. And if you break it down throughout the season, the cutoff is if you throw the ball, what? You just do the simple math. 30 times 5, that's $150. So I only have Jimmy G starting about 5 games. And I have Trey Lance projected at about 360, 365 passing attempts. So more than likely, Trey Lance is going to take over, as Don said, sooner rather than later. And I can't wait. It's perfect. He'll get some preseason games. He'll get some camp reps, as Don said, and he'll be able to hang during, you know, real live action games. And then when they've had enough of Jimmy G, Trey Lance is in and they're not going to look back. Their team is very close again. They were just in a Super Bowl, for God's sakes. I mean, this team is ready to rock on defense. I believe I heard that San Francisco was one of, if not the most highly injured team last season. So, I mean, that's that's nothing. You can't project that, just like touchdowns. You can never fully project stats like that. But this team feels like they're ready to win now, and I agree. And I think Trey Lance, in the long run, this season and moving forward, gives them the best opportunity to win. So I'm with Don. Week 5, week 6 at the latest, we see Trey Lance QB1 in San Francisco.
Yeah, and especially if you want to see anything out of the other weapons there, Trey Lance has to be the guy, because Jimmy G has shown he can't stay healthy long enough to get anything out of his weapons. Are there any sleepers in the QB room? I know Bryce Perkins has been receiving some buzz in camp. All right, let's go on to running backs. Chris, who are we looking at? Who's your number one running back in this division?
Oh, I mean, and this is going to be, it's going to hurt, but it's Chris Carson. I love Chris Carson, right? Everybody just craps on him. I don't know if this is PG, so I won't say the S word. Everybody craps on Chris Carson, and we know what we're getting with him. He's going to miss, what, 2-3 games a season, and that's fine. But in this offense, Pete Carroll loves to run the ball. You know, Daryl Bevel or Schottenheimer aside, this guy will get the rock. So to me, I love Chris Carson. And personally, it would have been Cam Akers. I think everybody would have agreed there, but the kid is gone. He's out. We wish him the best. But to me, tried and true, Chris Carson, give him the ball, you know, 250 times, and he'll get you where you want to go in this offense at running back.
Yeah, Chris Carson finished as the running back 19 last year, playing in only 12 games. So I think that says everything you need to know about what, you know, what Pete Carroll thinks about him and the workload he's going to get. Don, who are you keeping an eye on in this division?
Well, now with Akers exiting, it's got to be Darrell Henderson. I'm just so intrigued by the volume of production he's going to get now, because he's the guy. They've got a couple rookies in and hanging around with Xavier Jones and Jake Funk. That's nice. It's going to be the Henderson show, and he's a guy that's demonstrated that he can run routes, he can be effective in the passing game, and in limited sample sizes, he can contribute and be pretty good. They have a decent offensive line. They're going to have all kinds of opportunities in the passing game because of all that dynamic wide receiver play. So with a better quarterback opening things up, I think there's a lot of opportunity here for Henderson, and there'll be a letdown for what Akers was going to give you, but I don't think it's going to be like a cataclysm here.
Yeah, Jerry Fowler from ESPN reported that the Rams are all in on Henderson, that despite his injury history, they're just going to give him the rock. Now, you mentioned second-year player Xavier Jones. Jake Funk is also there. Are we keeping an eye on either of those two gentlemen, Kit?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Don alluded to Henderson having missed some time, at least last year, I don't remember. And so, you know, if he was to miss time again, one of those guys is going to have to step up and be the guy who gets the ball. Maybe they think about bringing in a veteran, but they've been pretty open that that's not what they're considering at this time. They're going to go with the guys they have in-house. So they must be liking some things about them. I think I read a McVay quote recently talking positively about Xavier Jones. And so, yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, they go from being, you know, kind of flyer fringe dynasty, even dynasty, deep dynasty roster guys to, hey, they're next in line to, you know, potentially receive a bulk of the work on what should be a very good offense.
Now, Chris, we've covered the two teams that sort of have defined roles for their running backs, even with the injury with the Rams. And we go to the Cardinals and the 49ers, who there's a lot of debate over who's going to get the ball. With the Cardinals, if you had to invest in either Chase or Connor, which way are you leaning?
It would be Chase. I mean, he's been in this offense, you know, for a few seasons now. We all expected it. I can remember as I sit here now, how many times last season did we say you need to add Chase Edmonds? He is in handcuff, and now he's become kind of like Tony Pollard in Dallas. He has standalone value, and when given the ball, he didn't like flounder, but he didn't like go nuts for us either. So now is his time to shine. James Conner, who I mentioned in my Fantasy Hell article, I love the guy. Outstanding work ethic. He's a good man. Beat cancer, all that. But listen, James Conner just couldn't stay on the field when he was in Pittsburgh. I don't know if going to a dome in warm weather, I don't know if any of that will kind of help his cause here. But that, from what we've seen, and that's all we can kind of base our decisions on or our conversations on, James Conner is just a speck on the fantasy football radar for me. What I'm most interested in would be Trey Sermon in San Francisco. I know that's the easy peasy thing if you live and breathe fantasy football like we do. I mean, Dynasty, heck, is in your guys' name here. Trey Sermon is someone that deserves our attention. Raheem Mostert, Kyle Juszczyk, who else do they have in this offense, right? I think Trey Sermon could grab this ball and take off with it. Raheem Mostert has always been a favorite of mine. Guy hits the sidelines at like 30 miles an hour. He's always charted as one of the fastest, you know, running backs in space that we've ever out of space, excuse me, that we've seen, right? He runs faster than hell, but Trey Sermon, Ohio State guy, didn't have a ton of draft capital, if I remember correctly, third round, something like early third round, if I'm not mistaken. But this offense, they're going to do everything and anything that they can to get it moving. Can you imagine week four or five, boys, Trey Lance gets his first start and they give the ball to Trey Sermon in his first start, the pandemonium that would create on social media. But maybe that's the shot in the arm that this team would need in this division at that moment in time. So all eyes on Trey Sermon for me as well. Aside from Chris Carson.
Yeah, I'm a big Trey Sermon truther. I love him. I know Matt Waldman was all in on him pre-draft. I think he is just a man's man at the running back position. He's nothing fancy, but he can get the work done just like Chris Carson does. They seem similar in that vein. Now, Don, as a Pittsburgh guy, do you have any hope for James Conner? Now, little known fact, Chris, I actually hate Chris James Conner. I'll share that with you afterwards. But yeah, I don't like him. Don, where are you at on Conner?
Yeah, I'm out. I just don't see him being able to stay on the field often enough. And even when he is on the field often enough, I think it's going to be enough of a timeshare that it's probably going to end up just breaking your heart between the two of them. So it's one of those deals. If you're trying to draft him to be like your RB2, you're probably going to be left out in the cold.
Kit, do you have a sleeper for this division?
I do. I can't quit Rashad Penny. A team loves to team loves to run the ball. He's looked good when he's played. You can't deny that. He's, I think he has close to a 5 yards per carry career average, even though it's been a couple years since he's been doing any of that. But again, we know Chris Carson's going to miss some time. I'm not a believer in Travis Homer. I know there are people who are believers in DJ Dallas, but I thought he was given a crack last year.
What?
And didn't look good. So I don't know. I think if Penny can, you know, get healthy for the week one, you know, there seemed like previously they wanted to make it a little bit of a split, maybe given his injury history, they back away from that. But I do think he's next in line behind Carson, who, as we said, part of what makes him so awesome is he runs like a bat, you know, out of hell. And that tends to have some injury consequences throughout the year.
If somebody offered me $100 to pick who your sleeper for this division was going to be at running back, I would never have guessed Rashad Penny. Let him sleep. I mean, it's not like put him to sleeper, right? You didn't mishear me.
No, Rashad Penny. I'm a believer still.
All right. Anybody else?
Yeah, just to be clear, I own DJ Dallas on every single one of my dynasty teams. I picked him up off the scrap heap last season. Remember, Chris Carson was down. Penny was on the IL, IR, whatever you want to call it. Monday night, it was a Monday night game. DJ Dallas put up 2 touchdowns, 120-ish yards, something like that. And he was highly sought after in my league, and I'm holding tight to him. And one more kid, it's Elijah Mitchell, again in San Francisco. I think there's a case where him and Trey Sermon somewhere in some parallel, you know, fantasy universe where Sermon and Elijah Mitchell can get it done and they can kind of release themselves from this. It's just been an awful situation at running back for this team. So you got two young kids come in together, learn and grow together with your young quarterback and Lance. Future's bright out there in San Francisco.
Yeah, absolutely.
I 100% agree. They haven't gone with a primary back because of injury, not because they haven't wanted to. And I think people confuse those two things, right? They exactly. always have injuries at that position. So if Sermon and Mitchell can show that they can stay healthy, they're going to feast.
And we all know in today's day and age, I mean, there's how many running backs, you probably count on one hand how many true stud workhorse backs there are. Derrick Henry, maybe Delvin Cook in Minnesota, health, you know, if health yeah. is there. And that's it. We all know in today's day and age, 2021, that the 2-1-2 punch kind of thunder and lightning approach is what teams are looking to do. And you can see the way other professional football teams, aside from the NFC West, have kind of, you know, worked up their roster. Look in Green Bay or Detroit. You know, you have these 1-2 punches, or Cleveland. I mean, come on.
Yeah, especially with a 17-game regular season, you're going to need to use three backs. And I think that's why you're seeing so much zero RB strategy, where people are punting on the position because they'd rather take five shots at some of these backups and committee backs than investing heavily when you can get a stud receiver early.
Very true. And you got a better chance at winning the lottery. You know, if you go zero running back, right, you're just taking kind of shot, like we kind of educated guesses, but we all know there's going to be what, a handful of kids or guys that come off the waiver wire list, a la, as I mentioned, DJ Dallas. So you're wasting, you know what, zero RB is not wasted to me, but it's like you're setting yourself up to be frantic in like week 7 through 12, where you're like, by all my running backs are injured. And so you're just, you're going to be playing the waiver wire game as it is. So that's just get a stud RB early to me personally, and then you can have the fun.
So you're more of Santiago Casanova calls it his seesaw approach. He takes one early, then waits for the rest.
Correct. Well, depending on my draft slot too, I know we could do a whole, you know, article or a whole video, what your favorite draft slot is, but mine is always the last pick of the rounds. So 12 team. I love to pick 12 because I can hammer home one position every time I'm up. And it, you know, it, as of late, 12th overall, I hammer home young running backs, Eckler, JT, Chubb and Saquon, things along those lines. And then seriously, I don't have to worry about that position till what? Round 9, round 10. So it kind of cuts my draft in half in a way where for the time being, I only have to worry about one, maybe two positions. And it makes me feel better. And the teams that I've built are very, they're powerhouses and I love them.
Fantastic. Gentlemen, let's move on to the wide receivers. Wide receivers are very, very deep in this division. Chris, who is your favorite wide receiver for fantasy in the West?
Well, I'll just name one guy because I don't want to blow Kits or I don't want to blow Dons because I'm sure they have a whole spiel prepared for each guy. So I'll keep it simple here. I'm a big Cooper Kupp guy, and I'm not saying I have him ranked over, you know, DeAndre Hopkins or DK Metcalf here. But to me, Cooper Kupper, as I told him, Cooper Kupp is just slow and steady. He's steady Eddie. He gets it done. And the only thing that kind of freaks me out is we saw with Jared Goff, there'd be games where Cooper Kupp Jared Goff only had eyes for Cooper Kupp. He'd have 8 or 10 receptions in the first half. And with Stafford, he gets the ball where it needs to go. And regardless, I think Cooper Kupp and Stafford are going to become best friends if they're not already here. So give me Cooper Kupp. You're getting him, what, in the 5th, 6th round sometime? I don't have his ADP in front of me, but you can get DK or DeAndre Hopkins in the first 2 rounds, right? You can grab Cooper Kupp, who's not going to have the same production in a way, but in terms of PPR points with receptions, you know, you can count on him for a definitive amount of points, you know, per week and on a, you know, a monthly or a yearly basis.
Yeah. He's going right now. His ADP is the back half of wide receiver 21. So absolutely for somebody who's going to have wide receiver one upside every week. Don, who are you looking at wide receiver in this division?
Look, it's not going to be all that interesting, but D-Hop is definitely the one for the whole division here. I mean, he's definitely the best receiver on that team. And the entire offense is called Air Raid for a reason. He's just going to get covered up in targets again and going to be a monster in an offense that's going to have to throw the ball a pile. So he's got to be the guy to have out of the whole crew because you know he's going to be the offense and he's going to be just loaded with targets.
Now, Kit, over in Seattle, everybody's DK is going so far ahead of Tyler Lockett, yet they finished 7 and 8 last year. Are you drafting DK well ahead of Lockett, or are they more even to you?
So in a dynasty circumstance, yes. I'm still way up on DK Metcalf because I think he has the physical profile and the youth on his side by, I think, about 5 years. I see why there's such a disparity. But for the price that they cost, I mean, if I'm a contender and looking to win this year or next year, I see the point that, you know, Lockett's going to offer you maybe not similar production, but, you know, considering you can get him 4 rounds later, maybe 5 rounds later, you know, I would lean Lockett in that regard. I do think that Metcalf, you know, you know, we've had a lot of debates, you know, back and forth about whether, you know, his inconsistency is really a handicap or to what extent it's a handicap. And I do think it is one, right? I think for a redraft, I'm probably staying away at what his price is. But again, I do just think he has the physical profile. He showed he can dominate the best of DBs, that I expect him to be, you know, a high floor player with also a high ceiling for the next 5 to 7 years.
Very good. Chris, we haven't talked about the 49ers wide receiver room. We have two guys who sort of play a similar type of wide receiver between Deebo and Brandon Ayuk. Are you leaning one way or another between those two?
Yeah, I'm all in on Brandon Ayuk, and I'll tell you why here. With Ayuk, he is the true to form. He is a pro football wide receiver, right? That's what he does. When you get him in the open space, he's gone. He can do everything you ask for him. I'm not saying that Deebo Samuel can't get that done, doesn't have the best history, you know, injury history, track record here. And he's, to me, Deebo Samuel, that they have yet to kind of unlock his full potential. I think Deebo Samuel would be unbelievably fantastic as a Swiss Army knife, kind of like his, I don't even know if they're related, Curtis Samuel, who went from Carolina, had a breakout season because they used him all over the field. You know, and in some cases, I've seen people say Deebo Samuel would be a hot commodity if they gave him running back eligibility on certain formats and certain websites here. So to me, Deebo is just, they're using him kind of one-sided. I don't know if the coaching staff is just blinded by that, but they need to kind of line him up all over the field. Let him, you know, pitch it to him. Let him throw swing passes, slants, all that under the map. We've seen, you know, his reception chart, right? He doesn't do good anything over, I believe, 20 yards or so. It's all red. It's all lower percentages. So he does his best work in between the 20s, short to intermediate style, and they keep trying to make him something he's not. So if you just lighten up or the breakthrough happens, I think Deebo Samuel, health provided, could be an absolute stone cold stud in this offense. But I can't draft my teams, or I can't do my notes or broadcast hoping, right, the coaching staff will come to some, you know, angelic kind of, you know, say so. So give me Brandon Ayuk in that offense, and I'm not even thinking twice about it. The moment that happens with Deebo, I might rethink what I'm saying. I might rehash this stuff, but right now it's Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah, one of the biggest hopes for Deebo is that Kyle Shanahan will go with Lance. And because it's Lance, do a lot of rollouts, have a lot of, you know, run pass option, something quick, and really utilize Debo's quickness off the line, like you said, for those short passes.
Line them up in the backfield. If you're hurting at running back, if you're always, you know, so sick and you're used to just like a running back turnstile here, get Trey Sermon some looks and then line Deebo Samuel up offset, something along those lines, right outside of the tight end in the slot. Line him up all over the field. It would benefit everybody involved.
And it would also help out a young QB to have the defense always guessing.
Absolutely. And Kittle, I mean, that'd be sick. Oh. You know, safety blanket after safety blanket. He would progress very well, Trey Lance, in that offense, given all these options.
Kit or Don, any sleepers that you're looking at or anybody else you want to talk about in this division?
You got to mention Bobby Trees. I mean, he's going to feast.
Yes.
Just there's no way around it. He's just going to feast. He's never had a quarterback anything like this. And for him and Kupp, that's just the upgrade of upgrades. So it's probably going to be peak Bobby Trees this year. If you want to go a little further down, Mohamed Sanu is like the consummate pro, has always been effective, and he's just going to come in with that very young 49ers wide receiver room, show him how it works and how to be a pro. Nothing better for a young quarterback. You can have it for nothing.
Yeah, he's not being drafted. He didn't show up on ADP, so he's not being drafted. Anybody you're looking at, Kit?
Yeah, I was just going to mention Dwayne Eskridge. I think he's going behind 6 wide receivers who were drafted after him in the NFL draft. I know he doesn't have a profile people love. He's 24, maybe under 6 foot. He might be 5'9". I think he's listed at 5'10". And so, you know, I understand why, you know, pure speed guys don't often work out, which seems like what he's been drafted to be to some extent. But NFL draft capital also is indicative of his success. He was a second round NFL draft pick. He seems like he's more or less getting ignored for some maybe sexier players. And so, yeah, he's somebody who, you know, if you can get him the 4th round of a rookie draft, you got a 2nd round wide receiver, I'd be all over that.
And he is definitely dropping because he just came off the PUP. Mm-hmm. He hasn't participated at all in training camp. Chris?
Yeah, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Rondale Moore really quick. Out of Purdue, the biggest knock on him was he's tiny. What is he, guys? 5'7", 5'8"? I think 5'8" is a little ambitious here. I'm a Big Ten guy in Michigan. Got to see him play live and in person several times for Purdue. And going into leading up to the draft and directly after the draft, people were knocking his size. I mean, he's faster than hell. He can jump like over buildings like Superman. But people were bummed out at his size. If we've seen anything so far in OTAs and camps in preseason, this kid looks legit. He's fast. He can burn anybody on the planet, and he can also, you know, be that gadget guy. And again, I don't want to keep throwing out gadget guy this, gadget guy that, because then if everybody's a gadget guy, then nobody is. But Rondale Moore to me is a kid where if you're an analyst, right, you do DFS or you do dynasty broadcasts like we are, you have to have a certain kind of gusto to see a kid and go, I don't care what anybody else says. I trust in my heart, in my eyeballs, and I know that Rondale Moore is going to be good in the NFL regardless of all the nonsense on social media. I'm not going to let, you know, a couple young kids or bums on social media talk me out of a guy. I'm not going to draft him. I'll trade him away. If you're in on Rondale Moore, then you're going to reap the benefits this season, and I'm going to say it now.
Yeah, Rondale Moore is everything that we all hoped Andy Isabella would be, and he's not. Right. He's pushing Andy Isabella right out of that offense.
He's a goner. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love the Rondale Moore pick. If we're going with diminutive wide receivers, I'd be remiss not to mention Tutu Atwell, who makes Rondale Moore look big. Tutu's a tiny guy, but man, he is fast. And we know Stafford can throw it deep. So I'll be interested to see if he gets some deep shots on that team. Anybody else? I mean, Jalen Hurd. Is it over? It's over, no. Johnny. It's not over.
I don't think it's over. This time, if you remember correctly, this time last year, I know I mentioned him on a couple of broadcasts. It might even be with you guys, where this time last year, they were saying Jalen Hurd is going to be the quintessential do-it-all. Line him up everywhere, and we're going to get that moving. Obviously, we think Deebo Samuel can step up and be that, but Jalen Hurd, they're going to give him another shot. I mean, he hasn't done anything to where the coaching staff would say, we're done with you. He hasn't been able to produce because what did he do, tear up his knee, or was it his ankle? Achilles? Or
2 years in a row. It wasn't his
back and then ACL.
Yeah, that's a bummer. So I'm not willing to cut bait on him yet. Let's see what we got. I mean, that offense, looking at it now, is more stacked than I had thought, you know, now that we're talking and I'm reading my notes and everything. So he's got his work cut out for him, but I'm not willing to give up on him just yet.
Yeah, you can't beat the size speed combo that he has. There was a point in this preseason where he begged out because of some injuries, and the team kind of came out and said, hey, maybe it's just not working out. And he immediately found some health and I think realized that he's on his last legs, quite literally. So if anybody can show up, you want a 6'4 guy who can blaze on your team. Speaking of great players, let's move to the tight ends. George Kittle. Where do we stand on George Kittle, Chris?
Excuse me, my computer was lagging there because I'm doing too much on it. But with George Kittle, to me, he is a top three tight end, might even be number two overall. You can't discount what Kelsey's doing, not until he proves why age has become a factor or he's shown no signs of slowing down. Shave the beard. Oh, well, I don't care. It's still Travis Kelce. But George Kittle, to me, can be just as good as Travis Kelce, if not better, in terms of yards after completions. We see when this guy gets the ball, he's going to carry defenders. He's going to carry, Gatorade jugs, wear, you know, WWF belts. He doesn't care. George Kittle is a madman. He's a monster. He's got all the tools that it takes. And I love all the intangible stuff, so all the character things. Throwing, you know, tight end expos in Nashville every year, working with TJ Hockenson, went to the same, you know, college and all that. So give me George Kittle. I'm all in on him. I would prefer Kittle over Waller. I know that's crazy, especially after what Waller did last season, but there's just something about George Kittle that I like. I connect with the guy, having never met him. He just does something to me. And I love that fiery, I'm going to kick your ass and I'm going into the end zone, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, he definitely has a passion that is evident just watching him play. The rest of the division's tight ends aren't too impressive, but Don, are you keeping an eye on anybody?
Well, there's always things to keep your eye on. Like, it would be interesting to see if Max Williams can ever put anything together. He was a high guy, but no, he's not gonna. Maybe Tyler Higbee, maybe. But it's kind of like, we're definitely in the mire of tight end land here.
I think Higbee could be maybe a post-type sleeper. Last year they really split targets. I think he had 60 and Everett had 60. The only stretch where he did get consistent targets, he performed. Now, I know that 2 years ago, Bryson Hopkins was kind of a hype rookie, and then this year, Jacob Harris is a hype rookie. But they're rookie tight ends who were fourth or later round picks, right? Those guys don't have a great rate of producing early. So I don't know. I see a path to 90 to 100 targets maybe, in which case, you know, maybe not sexy, but back in tight end one where there's a whole malaise of guys.
Yeah, I'd much rather have Jacob Harris and hope than Tyler Higbee. I have no faith in Tyler Higbee or Gerald Everett or Will Disley. I think Jacob Harris, it might take 2 years for him to pop out, but he is more of a pure receiving tight end. He outplayed Hopkins, looked much better than Hopkins did in the preseason so far. I'd much rather take that risk than what I know I have with Higbee.
I have this upside. I have this weird feeling, and you might, if you kick me off the broadcast for saying this, it is what it is. But why can't Gerald Everett in Seattle, why can't he have like a Robert Tonyan kind of year where not a ton of yardage, not a ton of receptions, but he puts up double-digit touchdowns? We know how many years in a row have we seen Seattle constantly in the red zone? You're throwing it up to DK or Lockett, and they're inside the five, inside the 10, and they just they don't like to run the ball sometimes, it seems like, when they're that close, and they throw to the tight end or they throw it up to DK Metcalf. So for some odd reason, I have a feeling Gerald Everett could score double-digit touchdowns here, and nobody's going to see it coming until we rewind this back, you know, and say, oh, Chris said it, but I know that's wild to say, but there's something telling me, pulling me in that direction that Gerald Everett may score 8 to 12 touchdowns this coming season.
Well, he's definitely a red zone threat. I mean, DK does sort of dominate there, but I would love to see a tight end bust out in Seattle because that will mean that they're passing the ball more. And if they're passing the ball more, that means Tyler and DK are both bumping up the charts.
And yeah. Russ is finally cooking for a full season. Yes. Hate that.
I mean, Cardinals don't have anybody. So any sleepers here? No. Colby Parkinson. He's a big guy out of Stanford. He's avoiding surgery only because it's the same injury he had last year. But I don't see anybody else in this division to even think about. But now that we discussed all the teams, I want to know two things. Who's going to win the division and who's coming in last in the division? Chris?
I have my eyes set on the Los Angeles Rams to win this division. And to be honest with you, it might come down to the final matchup between Arizona and Los Angeles. Winner, you know, gets, you know, a home playoff game, and the loser is just a wild card, and that's okay. So to me, I think the changing of the guard is this season. I could see Arizona second. So let's go Los Angeles Rams first, Arizona, San Francisco, three, Seattle dead last for the first time, you know, since what, the 80s, early 90s?
That would be an upset. That would be shocking to see them come in that low, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. Kit?
I also think the Rams are going to win the division. I think they have the new personnel. I think they've been an elite quarterback away from being a sort of a powerhouse team, and they finally have that elite quarterback, I believe, in Stafford. I actually think the Cardinals are going to finish last. I don't believe in Cliff Kingsbury. I don't believe in their defense. And I do believe in what the Niners have going on. There might be some struggles with Jimmy G, the Trey Lance transition, but it's a really good coaching staff, a really good offense. Like Chris mentioned, they were the most injured team in the league last year. They had a dominant defense the year before. I expect it to be very good. So I see their floors being higher, and I see Russell Wilson is and the offense is being a little bit too good in Seattle to underperform. So I feel like there could be issues for the Cardinals that sort of don't exist for the consistent solidness of the other teams.
Don?
Yeah, I'm going to go Rams here for the winner. They're just too good. That defense is just absolutely dominant. And for the bottom team, I'm going with the Cardinals here. I just don't think there's enough defense there. I don't trust their offensive line at all. Yeah, I like the quarterback and I like some of the weapons, but it's just the rest of the team just doesn't bring it forward.
Man, I thought I was going to be saying something different by going with the Rams. I was going to say the Cardinals, but you know what? I'm going Seattle. I think it falls apart in Seattle. I think it, you know, I think the rest of the teams have moved far enough ahead. And I think this whole holding Russ back is going to backfire on them. So I think Seattle is going to come in last. All right, gentlemen. Well, it is time for tags, but we let the riders know where they can find you and any final thoughts. I want to start by saying a special thanks to Chris Robin. You can find him on Twitter at Detroit Beastie and all season for Team Rise and Fall. Chris, any final thoughts or plugs?
Yeah, absolutely. You said it best. You can find me on Twitter at Detroit Beastie. I won't bore anybody with plugs or anything. Just know that, you know, if you're trying to do something by yourself, reach out and ask for help. Alone, we can only do so much. But when we come together, it's just an infinite, you know, there's nothing that we can't do together. So if you're struggling, you need to reach out. Mental health, work, thoughts, notes, anything. You can always DM me. I'm sure the boys here, nobody would turn you away. Alone, we can only do so much. Together, we can accomplish everything.
Amen. Kit.
Hey, you can find me on Twitter at KitV_DynastyFF and on Reddit at KitKit123. And can't think of a good piece of advice. I'm tapped out.
Don, you're up.
Guys, we pour so much of our time and energy into it. Putting together a team, make it a team that you like. Make it a team for guys that you think you really want to be a fan of and you feel something for. We'd love to win, but we actually like to win better when it's guys that we know, like we were right. We love those guys. So follow your heart and do what you want because you want to love your team.
Well, I'm at JJ Wenner on Twitter. You can also find me hosting the Thursday edition of the Getting Defensive podcast. I want to thank Don and Kit for helping me produce the pod. Thank you again to Chris for stopping by. It's always good to see you, my brother. And thank you to the writers for tuning in. You know, Chris posted something on Twitter today that struck a chord with something I was thinking about a lot while I was in Canton. People who criticize you, don't take it personally. It's saying more about them than it is ever saying about yourself. So listen to the criticism. But just remember, it reflects more on them than on your performance. So from all of us to all of you, be safe, be well, and remember, never say anything to make a meeting longer or cut a happy hour short. Boat drinks, my friends, boat drinks.